My stupid heart still thinks it could.
You might not have heard of some of your favorite Georgia musicians were it not for Russell Carter. The Atlanta native started his career in entertainment law, representing bands like R.E.M. and Widespread Panic. And in 1989, he formed his own management company. Among his first clients, none other than those Georgia jewels, the Indigo Girls. He still manages them today, along with a slew of other artists like Shaylee Wright, Sean Mullins, Matthew Sweet, and rising star Parker Millsap. Russell is also responsible for the Wire and Wood Songwriters Festival in Alpharetta and the 30A Songwriters Festival in Florida. To talk about all of these exciting tidbits, we have Russell here in studio. Welcome to City Lights.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. So, Russell, take us back to 1989. Why did you want to switch from entertainment law to artist management?
Well, basically, I wanted to get more involved in the careers of the artists that I was working with. And as a lawyer, you have a limited role. Obviously, you're negotiating contracts primarily for artists. But I started from scratch out of law school. And the only way I could get clients was to go into clubs and find people that I thought were worthy of getting a record deal and pursuing a professional career. So I would nurture them in various ways as a lawyer and try to connect them with record labels and publishing companies, and then find them a manager and negotiate a producer contract when they made their first record. And then basically I would sit on the sidelines and hope all those people did their job and the artist's career would develop to the point where they needed more legal work. And that happens sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But
some
not
of those
always.
Instances.
And, you know, sometimes a band would get a manager who was associated with another attorney and they would go to another attorney, which was fair enough. But as I got more involved in the business and learned a lot about it over the course of a decade, you know, I figured out what promotion was and what marketing was and what was entailed with sales. And I just had figured out a lot more than the business affairs and legal end of it. So I just made kind of a leap of faith. And honestly, a couple of artists made a bigger leap of faith hiring me.
Well, our friend Mara Davis says you have an uncanny ability to spot talent. And the fact that the Indigo Girls were among your earliest clients attests to that. How did you meet them?
They came to my office and asked me to represent them. And I can tell you that the connection was REM for almost all of my initial clients. And I'll tell you, my involvement with REM, I went to law school at UGA, and Burtis Downs was a friend of mine from college and in law school with me. And Burtis has been their lawyer and manager and just kind of in charge of their entire career from the beginning all the way until they retired. But a friend of ours from college said, hey, go see this band. And we saw them the very first time they played. And I got out of law school before Bert, so I actually did the initial, you know, very basic work for them and for Burtis. Set up their management deal, set up a record company for one of the managers, and incorporated the band. And then Bert took over when he got out, and that's been his career. But REM referred probably 25 bands to me.
Wow.
And as soon as I started getting record deals for bands, then all of a sudden I had a music career.
Well, you were in Athens really at the beginning of this explosion of music that has made it
Which was a
famous.
Tremendous music scene. And I was a music fan from you know, childhood on. I wrote a lot about music in high school and college and, you know, bought zillions of records.
What did you listen to in high school and college?
You know, all the classic stuff in the late 60s and 70s. I saw the Beatles in Atlanta, which was, you know, that solidified my interest in music. And
do you like Motown?
Loved Motown.
Big Motown fan.
Southern soul. But, you know, Beatles, Stones, Bob Dylan fanatic.
So you've stuck with the Indigo Girls and some of your earlier clients for this very long time. Do you feel like your band's become your family?
Absolutely.
What's the relationship like? Do you have sibling rivalry? And do you scold your children? Or is it all very, you know, loving family reunion type stuff?
Well, it's called personal management for a reason. And it is a very personal relationship. You know, Amy and Emily and I kind of grew up in the business together. There's a lot of mutual respect. I mean, they're the creative geniuses, and I'm there to nurture that creativity and try to find ways to plug it into business situations where they can, you know, expand their horizons musically. And it's worked really well, but, you know, they help raise my kids. I mean, I have three sons who are very musical. They can play every Indigo's song ever written.
Well, that was a good match then.
They meet all their girlfriends by, you know, when they're in college, they're playing Closer to Fine, and somebody knocks on the door and says, "You like the Indigo Girls?" And they say, "I was in that video," and they're off and running.
Oh, how fun. If you're just joining us, our guest is Russell Carter. He has a long, and I guess you could call it legendary, career behind the Georgia music scene. This is City Lights on WABE Atlanta. We'll be back after a short break.
Support for WABE comes from Nissan of Noonan. Nissan of Noonan, a fresh approach to the car buying experience. Their number is 844-FRESH-15. Online at nissanofnoonan.com.
Galileo's head was on the block. The crime was looking up the truth. And as the bombshells of my daily fears explode, I try to trace them to my youth. And then you had to bring up reincarnation over a couple of beers the other night. And now I'm serving time.
Hi, I'm Lois Reitzes, back with you and Russell Carter talking about his career with Georgia's top artists. I saw that you managed the Bengals for a time. When was that?
They had two phases. Their first phase was in the 80s when they had all their big hits. You know, Manic Monday and Walk Like an Egyptian and Eternal Flame. And then they broke up. They just hit the stage where they were getting married and having kids, and they just walked away from it all for a while. But then they got the bug and got back together and wanted to tour and make another record, and they hired me at that stage. So for, I guess, about a decade, I managed them and mainly dealt with their touring, which was the nature of the business. By the time they got back into it, selling records was no longer a big thing in the industry, but touring had gotten very large, and they are very much in demand.
Russell, you said that Amy and Emily, the Indigo Girls, came to you. What's it like on your end? How do you know when you want to work with an artist? I imagine you can see some irascible types, not everyone with personalities as gentle and lovely as Amy and Emily.
I mean, they came to my office, we met, and I'd never seen them. So I went to, what's that place called? Neighbors in Virginia Highlands. It's still there, on St. Charles. And, you know, sat in a booth and drank a beer, and they played probably 10 songs. several covers. I remember them playing James Taylor and Elton John songs, but they each played songs they'd written, and they were stunningly original and like inspired beyond belief performances. Not the kind of thing you saw in a little beer pub typically. I mean, all the marks of, you know, true musical genius were there. I mean, they joke all the time that my advice was, you guys need to go write more music, which was not dismissing what they had written or the potential talent, but they just needed more material before I could take them to record labels and say, these guys are ready for the big time. But, I mean, they are super dedicated, hardworking, and ambitious, and they've never lost any of those qualities. They're everything, all those things today.
Yeah, but, you know, what's impressive to me in particular with the Indigo Girls is, despite having thousands of fans and living this rock star life, they're so grounded.
That's right.
That's not easy. With the artists you've worked with, is that a struggle for most of them, balancing fame and real life?
Well, I mean, across the board it is. I mean, it's an incredibly tough business to be a musician professionally. Most people who try fail. People who get record deals usually last for, you know, 5 years at most and then fizzle out. To sustain a career over 30 years, like Amy and Emily have done, you have to be balanced. And you have to have a wealth of talent, because you have to continue to create relevant music over time.
Otherwise, you're a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, or two-album wonder, or whatever the case may be. But
one of your new artists is Parker Millsap. How did you find him?
Well, I should correct you. I don't actually manage Parker. I've been very supportive of him, and he's booked by the Indigo Girls booking agent. It's just fun for me to find talent and help in any way I can. And in Parker's case, I've booked him at Wire and Wood and at the 38 Songwriters Festival. And I mean, this year, it's in January actually, so it's next year, 2017. I've booked him on the headline stage with John Prine and Sean Colvin. So I'm showcasing him in a big way. And then he's playing some shows at night at that festival as well. So I don't actually manage him, but I'm a huge supporter of him. I think he's super talented.
These subtleties. I mean, I know they're very distinct to you in the business, but there's so much that people aren't aware of that goes into the business end of this creative industry. Your artists usually fall into the Americana category. They're playing blues, folk, country. What is it about those genres of music that attracted you to that world?
I mean, to me, it's the most authentic kind of popular music. Artists in that general genre typically write all of their music. They're singer-songwriters. And growing up, that's what I was attracted to, you know, Lennon, McCartney, and Jagger, Richards. I mean, if they didn't write their own music, they wouldn't be the kind of bands that they were. Mm-hmm. You know, Dylan, obviously, people like that. So
that's a good point. We wouldn't necessarily make that leap to, you know, the very essence of singer-songwriting with styles as different as the Stones and Americana, you know, Stones, Beatles, and Americana. You mentioned Wire and Wood and 30A. The Wire and Wood Songwriter Fest is in Alpharetta, and the upcoming 30A in Florida. What goes into producing those festivals? It seems like a huge undertaking.
It is, and it's gotten bigger every year. I got into it originally, 30A, the very first year, there's the Cultural Arts Alliance, that's a nonprofit, was producing it as a fundraiser. And they called me to book Sean Mullins, who I manage. And I was down there. I have a home down on the beach. And I said, let's have coffee. And I realized none of them were in the music business. They were all arts, you know, related people and put on great events, but they didn't really know what a manager and an agent did. So I volunteered and they put me on the board of the nonprofit, and I booked the Bangles and Matthew Sweet and Indigo Girls. I basically leaned on all my clients to do it. I told them I'd give them a fun beach house and a little bit of money. Well, it turned out all the artists had an amazing amount of fun down there, and the community supported it. And you know, there were 1,000 people the first year, and now it's 5,000 people and 175 artists and 250 shows in 4 days.
Wow.
And it's all singer-songwriters.
Any songs, anything inspired, you know, out of the festivals that
people
you can point to?
People co-write all the time together. And a lot of the people that play down there are the elite country writers that write number one hits for the stars. You know, a lot of country stars don't actually write their own music. But to get the people who do into a 300-seat room and let them tell the stories of what they wrote and why and how they pitched it to the artist. And it's fascinating.
I think it would be fun to be with 300 in the room. I'd love to hear some of those crazy stories about, you know, Lucille and any of the others. 30A will feature plenty of Georgia musicians. What do you get excited about in our state's music scene today? Is it still Athens?
You know, it's always been more than Athens. I mean, Atlanta has always been a huge mecca. I mean, for the same reason it is a regional place for all kinds of businesses. People from all over the Southeast come to Atlanta because of the club scene and the lawyers and the managers. And back in the record label days, the regional offices were all here. So the odds of doing well were better if you came to Atlanta than, you know, stayed in a small town in South Carolina or something. So it's always been kind of a melting pot. I mean, Atlanta is not known for one genre. I mean, obviously it's had a huge hip-hop scene.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the late 80s, the singer-songwriter scene, you know, John Mayer and Sean Mullins, Indigo Girls, and, you know, dozens of artists came out of either Athens, Atlanta, or, you know, the environs. And, you know, dating back, Macon, and there's the whole blues and soul, you know, heritage, which is amazing.
Do you see yourself having more of that in future festivals? Do you see a greater integration ahead? Or is the Americana strictly,
I mean, soul music, as far as I'm concerned, is Americana as well. Any soul artist that writes their own music is welcome to 30A.
Ray Charles would approve.
Yeah, Ray Charles would have been just fine.
He would have smiled at. Loved country.
Yeah, he made amazing records. One of my favorites.
Me too. Russell Carter, thank you very much for joining us.
You're more than welcome.
Wishing you happy holidays.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Russell Carter is an artist manager here in Atlanta, along with a festival organizer. His next feat is the 30A Songwriters Festival in South Walton, Florida. And it will be featuring many Atlanta artists. That's January 13th to 16th.